This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie, Get Shorty, is based on a best-selling novel by my guest Elmore Leonard. He's one of America's most popular and most critically acclaimed crime writers. His novels include 52 Pickup, Freaky Deaky, Kill Shot, Rum Punch, and his latest, Riding the Rap. Pulp Fiction director Quentin Tarantino cites Leonard as a major influence. Tarantino has bought the movie rights to 4 of Leonard's novels, and he convinced a reluctant John Travolta to star in Get Shorty. Travolta plays a loan shark from the East Coast who goes to L.A. to collect on a gambling debt and finds that a loan shark can feel quite at home in Hollywood. The guy who owes him money, Harry Zim, is a producer of schlock horror films. Travolta figures he could be a good producer. After all, he knows a lot about money and intimidation. Travolta gets his hands on a script he wants to produce, and he's looking for some help from the star of Zim's schlock horror films, played by Rene Russo.
I brought you a copy of the script.
Oh, I already read it. Harry left a copy at the house.
Well, how'd you like it?
Well, it's not horrible.
Well, I don't like the title, and I don't like some of the characters in it.
So you read it?
Well, I haven't read it yet, but I will.
You and Harry make a great team.
Is that right?
Listen, I'm going to make a deal with him.
Oh, good. You found out a character you like for yourself?
No, I don't want to act in it. I want to produce it, especially if I help him get Martin.
Well, hey, that's fair, huh?
Yeah. So what do you get out of it?
Is that why you came down here to ask me that?
I want to know.
Well, why would anyone want to be in the movies?
Yesterday, you were a loan shark.
Yeah, but I was never that into it. I'm especially this book about having respect. Forget about it. I mean, it's bad enough treating these guys like they're your heroes, you know, smiling at stupid comments they think are so funny.
You think the movie business is any different?
Elmore Leonard, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
You write mostly in dialogue.
Yeah.
There's not that much, you know, like a lot of crime fiction, there's a lot of interior thought, a lot of like first person, just like thinking, contemplating.
Mm-hmm.
Very little of that in your novels. It's mostly dialogue. Why have you taken that direction in your writing?
I like dialogue. I've always liked dialogue from the very beginning. When I started 44 years ago, I was influenced by writers who were very strong in dialogue. Hemingway, John O'Hara, Steinbeck. A writer not many people know about, Richard Bissell, in the 50s. Pajama Game was made from one of his books, 7.5 Cents. I like dialogue. I like to see that white space on the page, in the exchanges of dialogue, rather than those big, heavy paragraphs full of words. Because I remember being feeling intimidated back in the, say, in the 40s when I first started to read popular novels. Book of the Month Club books, I would think, God, there are too many words in this book. And I still think there are too many words in most books. But dialogue appeals to me. If I can set a scene, and this is what I do, I write in scenes, and I always write from a character's point of view so that the scene takes on the character's sound, at least to some extent. The sound even goes into the narrative.
When you started writing crime fiction, were there places that you would hang out just to listen?
I would hang out in Detroit, Frank Murphy Hall of Justice, which is the criminal court, and watch examinations, little trials, rather than the, these are the pretrial exams to find out whether a crime has been committed or not. And then finally, by 1979-80, I was spending time with the Detroit police. And I would, I did a piece for the Detroit News on homicide section. That was the first and only piece of journalism I've ever done. And it's the kind of, it was the kind of piece that maybe you'd spend 3 days with the homicide cops and then spend it, take a day to write it, and that was it. But I was with them at least 3 weeks before I even wrote a word and got to know them, and they trusted me, and they showed me their case files. I could just sit there in the squad room and listen to them.
What would you say struck you as being most different about the way cops talked from the way your friends or colleagues talked?
Well, the way cops talk, they're not as educated for the most part. They'd remind me of professional soldiers, professional non-coms, a guy who's been a sergeant in the Army for 20 years or so. That I respected them. They really wanted to close cases. I saw that nobody was dragging his foot. They were all working hard, and they liked what they were doing. And that inspired me.
Now, it seems to me you're also particularly interested in colloquialisms and, you know, colorful language inventions that people come up with, little slang words.
Yeah, but you have to be very careful about using slang because expressions come into popularity and go out overnight. I remember back in 68, 69, the bounce was an expression. You probably don't even, you haven't even heard it. But I wrote a book, The Big Bounce, because the bounce seemed to be, you're looking for the bounce. You're looking for a little excitement. And I used that in a title. And I thought this was going to be a popular expression, and it didn't make it, the bounce. You know, nobody uses it now. There are things that you still hear cool, and I don't know, even some people are still saying out of sight. But you have to be, I can't rely on slang, and I don't. It's rhythms of speech that I'm mostly interested in.
Danny DeVito plays a character in Get Shorty who is a very much in-demand actor. He's got a memoir that shows up in everybody's house or in everybody's bathroom. Everybody's reading it. And he's an actor who's very short but has a very big ego.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if you've met a lot of actors in Hollywood with very big egos who you've had to deal with. Maybe you could tell us a story without mentioning names about working with actors.
Well, Dustin Hoffman says that the book's about him. He told Rene Russo when they were doing Outbreak. Is it Break? Outbreak.
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 Breakout would be about pimples.
Yeah.
This is about an epidemic.
Yeah. And I don't know how he did that movie in that suit, in that...
Oh, right, that space suit that you wear to protect yourself from the germs, yeah.
Yeah, the whole movie. He asked her what she was doing next, and she said, Get Shorty. And he said, oh, he said, you know, that book's about me. And he even told me that one time on the phone. He said, my people kept that book away from me because they told me it's about me.
Why does he think it's about him, and
because,
is it?
Because we had spent some months together over a period of 7 or 8 months. We had meetings about a book of mine, La Brava, that he was interested in, but came to naught. He made a deal with a studio and then decided not to do it. So, but I asked him, I said, do you recognize yourself in it? Do you see anything that... Any lines, for example, that I might have picked up from those meetings? And he said, well, no. I said, no, well, no. There are a lot of short actors in Hollywood and a lot of short stars, you know? And somewhere along the line, when I was writing the book, I thought Get Shorty was a good title. And then I thought that Chili Palmer, the character, would refer to, once they got on the track of Martin Weir, the actor, that he would refer to him as Shorty. I thought he would in the book, but he didn't. It just didn't feel right. When I would get to that part where he might refer to him that way, he didn't. And so I had the title, but no Shorty, no one referred to as Shorty. Because when Nora Ephron reviewed it in the New York Times, she didn't know who Shorty was. She called the New York Times and asked them, and then they called my publisher and say, who's Shorty? And then my publisher called me and said, they want to know who Shorty is. I said, well, at least read one of the last lines in the book in a scene where Chili Palmer, referring then to the actor, says, he's too short. And the woman, Karen, his girlfriend now, who in the book was then a studio executive, says, they're all short. You shoot up. And that was it. That was the only reference.
So is that character related to Dustin Hoffman at all?
No, not any more so than any other. He might have ordered off the menu when I was with him once or twice. Where I got the idea of actors not ordering from the menu.
Right, they have to make up something very difficult and very special that's designed, you know, a kind of customized lunch.
But he didn't do that. Mm-hmm. He didn't go through that elaborate description of the omelet that he wanted. But everyone confirms, not everyone, but people do confirm this, that, yeah, actors don't order from the menu.
So do you like working in Hollywood, or do you find things often go wrong?
Well, it's work. And I don't think of book writing as work. That's the main difference. I'm writing a book, and I'm getting complete satisfaction. Well, when it goes right, but by the end of the day, I'm happy with what I've done because I put in a full day, 9:30 to 6 o'clock, and the time flies by. And it's the best job in the world. Journalists say to me, "He says, God, you got the best job in the world. You sit here, you write exactly what you want. The time." Flies by. The only person I have to please is myself. Well, eventually, of course, I have to please my editor. But if your editor, your publisher likes you, knows that it can, and they can count on you. They know that you're going to deliver. Then you're all set. But then you go out to Hollywood, and now you have all sorts of people to please. And wives and girlfriends too, and there's just a lot more work. There's all that rewriting, and when you're adapting your own book, your enthusiasm, your energy has already gone into the book. Now you've got to get it back up again to write the screenplay, and there'll be some new scenes in which you can exercise then an amount of energy, you know, to get excited about it. But for the most part, what are you doing? You're just kind of redoing it. So I'm not even sure if I'm any good as a screenwriter.
Elmore Leonard is my guest, and his novel Get Shorty is the basis of the new film Get Shorty, starring John Travolta. His new novel is called Riding the Rap. Let's take a short break, and we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Elmore Leonard. His novel, Get Shorty, is the basis of the new film, Get Shorty, and his latest novel is called Riding the Rap. Now, in Get Shorty, in the novel and in the movie, the character of Chili, the character played in the movie by Travolta, is always saying to people who he wants to intimidate, look at me.
Uh-huh.
And because the character is so confident, and because he has the power to back up his confidence, people usually get the point when they look at him. I mean, he does intimidate them.
Mm-hmm.
Then another character tries that, and it doesn't work because he doesn't have the confidence or the power to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
How did you think of coming up with that? Was there an idea behind that?
The real Chili Palmer, who worked for this friend of mine who was the private eye, once in a while were retained by the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas to call on individuals in South Florida who owe them money, not to intimidate them, just to ask them, are you going to start making payments? Be nice. There wasn't any, no violence ever involved. But my friend, the private investigator, Bill Marshall, he would talk to the guy, and Marshall is a very entertaining guy, and he would get the guy laughing. But Chili Palmer, who was sitting next to him, and he would stare at the guy and just stare and never say a word. Now, he never said, look at me. I made that up. But the idea of the intimidation in that stare, I thought I could use that.
Yeah, well, his motto, Chili's motto, is actually don't talk when you don't have to.
He said, there's a line... where he says, I'm not going to say a word to him. I'm not going to say any more than I have to, if that.
Right.
And Barry keeps waiting for a laugh on that line.
And in the novel, when he's trying to intimidate somebody, he says, you know, I mean, his approach is don't tell them what can happen if they don't pay.
Yeah.
Just stare at them, because anything you tell them isn't going to be as bad as what they can imagine. They're going to imagine anything far worse than what you could do. So just let their imagination work.
Yeah, and Harry Zim says to him, Gene Hackman, he says, what do you break their legs then, huh? And And Chili says, "What do you mean, break their legs? How are they going to pay you if they're in the hospital with their legs broken?" No, we don't break their legs.
So what did you learn about how loan sharking works from the real Chili Palmer?
Well, we really didn't get that much into it. It was just the idea that he's a loan shark. But I never got into the day-to-day, what he goes through in the business, how he loans the money. Oh, there's a little monologue in the book on how he tries to dissuade someone from borrowing the money. Don't borrow this money unless you know you're going to pay it back. You're not going to sign any kind of an agreement. You're not putting up your house, but you're going to pay me this money with so much interest, and that's it, and it's your word. But please don't take it unless you know you're going to pay me. You know, and it's quite a nice monologue, I thought, in the book, and a lot of it is from Chili, the real Chili.
Now, in your latest novel, Writing the Rap, there's a kind of unusual twist on the hostage story or the kidnapping story.
Yeah.
Would you say something about the hustle you came up with for that?
The individual who masterminds this, if that's the word, he had watched what had been going on in Beirut with the hostages, how they were kept, especially how they were blindfolded and chained or tied up, what they were fed, and he wonders, is there any money in that? Is there any money in hostage taking? And to do it right. And he thinks, yeah, well, look, if you get a guy who's got a lot of money and you blindfold him and he doesn't know where he is and you don't even talk to him for a few days or a week or so, and then finally you say, do you want to get out of this? You tell me how you can give me $2 million. You have to work it out. No ransom notes. Nobody knows this but you. You tell us how you can deliver to us a certain amount of money, a couple of million, and we'll let you go. If we don't like the idea, you're dead. So then it's up to the victim, you see? And it sounds good. Of course, in this book, the perpetrator wants to be very, very realistic about it. He wants straw mats. He wants to feed them mutton, stale cheese. He wants to do it. He wants to do it exactly the way they did in Beirut. He said, "Well, we'll put him in a basement somewhere." And his accomplice says, "Where are you going to find a basement in Florida?" Now, just everything is against him doing it the way he feels is the right way.
Elmore Leonard, his novel Get Shorty is the basis of the new film. His latest novel is Riding the Rap. This is Fresh Air. We're back with crime novelist Elmore Leonard. The new film, Get Shorty, is based on his best-selling novel. Do you think you would have made a good criminal? Let's face it, in a lot of ways you have the mind. You know, you say most of your stuff isn't from research. You just, you know, sit at your typewriter and think it up.
Well, I can think of that, but I wouldn't have the nerve.
Mm-hmm. Are you a confident guy? I mean, you know.
I'm confident about my work. My work. Yeah,
right.
But that took about 15 years, you know, to gain confidence in what you do. I couldn't imagine walking into a bank and saying, give me what money you have on top of that little alarm system that the last bill is lying on, and don't give me any dye pack, and don't give me any funny money or monies with the serial numbers, listed. If you know enough about it, I think you can get away with it. I think bank robbery would be pretty easily, even though 9 out of 10 bank robbers are caught. And I think mostly because they tell other people what they do, and because they're not really professional about it. They need money for drugs.
Now, a lot of your guys are talkers, and they could talk their way.
They have to be talkers.
Yeah, right. They talk their way into things and out of things. And can you do that?
No.
So you couldn't do in real life what your characters do, verbally?
Oh, no, never. No. See, the beauty of it in a scene where you end the scene with a line, with the perfect line, you know? But you write in the book, and you have months to think about it.
Right. Now, do you, like 5 minutes or 2 days after the moment has passed, think of a good last line you could have said in real life, or do you not think in real life in those terms?
Well, in real life, I'm sitting on a bench at Aspen, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, dead tired. I've come down the mountain. A woman skis down, 25, 30 years younger than I am, puts one boot up on the bench and says, I don't know what's more satisfying, taking off my boots or, and then she used an expression for sleeping with somebody.
And you said?
And I said, huh, like that. A little, and that was probably 15 years ago. And I've been trying to think of it doesn't even have to be snappy, just something, a decent comeback, you know.
What would you have wanted to communicate to her?
Just something clever. What would Woody Allen say? That would have been enough for me, yeah. I hadn't thought of that before either. I should have put myself in Woody Allen's. And he would have said something a little out, you know.
Well, there might have been a difference between what he said in real life or what he said in a movie.
Well, that's true. I don't think, it wasn't an invitation. She was simply describing how she felt.
Now, I know you were a drinker for many years. When you stopped drinking, did drinking change in your novels?
Yeah. No, the drinking didn't change. I had a little bit more energy then for writing, and I think my books got better. I quit in 77. It's been 18 years. And I think from the late 70s into the 80s on that my books have gotten a lot better.
Did your characters drink any more when you stopped?
No, they continued to drink. I couldn't stop them. They were still drinking Early Times and Jack Daniels. No.
What is it still like for you to write alcohol scenes when
no problem
you can't drink
no
do you particularly enjoy it or anything? Is it
yeah because they enjoy it. I have in the book I'm writing Karen Sisko, the marshal, and her dad, who's my age, are sitting in the backyard drinking Jack Daniels, sipping it and talking, and they really enjoy it. And I can understand that, but I don't have any desire to drink, thank God, because I know if I did, I would, I'd get drunk again. I'd become a drunk.
You started your fiction career writing Westerns.
Yeah.
Tell us about one of the Western heroes you created.
Western heroes. Did I create any?
Western characters.
Oh, yeah. Hombre. I like that character a lot, which Paul Newman played.
In a movie,
yeah. Yeah, I thought I was very proud of that one. And also I liked Valdez Is Coming, which Burt Lancaster did. Valdez Is Coming is my favorite Western that I wrote. And at the time, when I read it now, I can see my style beginning to change into what I'm doing now. Really not what I'm doing now, but it began to change.
More dialogue-oriented?
Yeah, a little more dialogue, a little more characters, a little more human. I'm loosening up a little bit. And that's what I finally learned, because I had studied Hemingway so closely and learned a lot, but I didn't agree with his attitude about life, about himself. He took everything himself, everything so seriously. But your style comes out of your attitude, what kind of a person you are, you know, your personality, how you see things. Are you optimistic? Are you funny? Are you grim? What? This is all out of your attitude. And once I learned that, then I had to find other writers to study and imitate.
Well, how would you compare your attitude to Hemingway's?
Well, I don't see that much. There is that much to take seriously in everyday situations that come up that people worry about, or people worry about things that might happen, you know, which is a big waste of time. I don't worry.
You don't worry?
I don't worry.
So this is one of the differences between you and Hemingway. You don't worry about things.
No.
You don't brood about things.
We know how seriously he took himself, right, with that shotgun he put in his mouth.
Right.
No, I don't see any reason to do that.
Right.
I don't take my work that seriously, and I think that's what keeps me loose. if I try to write, if I catch myself trying to write, I'll fall right on my face. I'll see it. If I see in the prose that I'm boy, look at me writing, I rewrite it. I rewrite it because I think it's distracting.
Well, Elmore Leonard, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Terry, thank you.
Elmore Leonard, the new film Get Shorty is based on his novel of the same name. His latest novel is Riding the Rap.